Welcome to today's deep dive. Today we're going to be talking about a case that's a real cornerstone of tax law, Gregory v. Helfring. And you know, it's fascinating how a case decided all the way back in 1935 still has such a huge impact on taxes today.
Oh, absolutely. This case is anything but a dusty relic of the past. Gregory v. Helfring really set the stage for how we approach tax avoidance, even in today's, you know, complex and fast-paced world. It's the very foundation of what we call the substance over form doctrine, a concept that's central to countless tax disputes even now.
So it sounds like we're talking about a real game changer here.
Yeah.
But before we get into all the legal details, can you set the scene for us?
Sure. So Evelyn Gregory was a businesswoman who was looking to minimize her tax burden. And, you know, she owned United Mortgage Corporation, which held valuable shares in another company called Moniker Securities. Now, if she'd simply taken those shares as dividends and then sold them, she would have been hit with a pretty hefty dividend tax bill.
Right. Makes sense.
So she came up with what she thought was a clever plan to avoid that.
Okay. I'm all ears. What'd she do?
Well, she created a brand new corporation, Avril Corporation, and she transferred those Moniker shares over to this new entity.
Okay, so far so good.
But here's where it gets interesting. Just a few days later, she dissolves, Avril takes the Moniker shares back as her own, and then she sells those shares.
That sounds like a lot of hoops to jump through just to avoid some taxes. I'm guessing the IRS wasn't too thrilled about this little mover.
You guessed right. The IRS saw right through it. They viewed this whole dance with Avril Corporation as nothing more than a facade, a scheme specifically designed to dodge those higher dividend taxes.
So it wasn't just a matter of disagreeing on the numbers. What was the IRS's core argument against what Gregory did?
The IRS argued that this entire setup with Avril lacked any genuine business purpose. There were no real operations, no employees, no real reason for this corporation to exist other than as a vehicle to exploit a loophole in the tax code.
So basically, they were saying it was all smoke and mirrors.
Exactly. And this is where those two key legal concepts we mentioned earlier, the business purpose doctrine and substance over form, really come into play.
I think this would be a good time to break down those concepts for our listeners. Can you explain what those terms actually mean in practice?
Of course. The business purpose doctrine essentially says that any transaction, especially one with big tax implications, needs a legitimate reason for existing beyond just saving on taxes. The courts are going to ask, what real business objective is being achieved here?
So you can't just whip up a company for a week, shuffle some assets around, and call it a reorganization to get a tax break.
Nope. And that's where the substance over form doctrine comes in. This principle basically means the courts are going to look beyond the legal technicalities and examine the true nature of a transaction. They want to see the economic reality, not just how it's dressed up on paper.
Got it. So even if someone finds some obscure loophole in the tax code, if their real goal is just to duck taxes, they're probably going to run into problems.
Yeah, precisely. The IRS and the courts are going to peer behind the curtain and scrutinize the actual economic substance of the deal. And in Gregory v. Helfring, that's exactly what went down. The Supreme Court ultimately sided with the IRS, sending a very clear signal that tax avoidance schemes lacking a real business purpose won't fly.
Wow. It sounds like the Supreme Court really laid down the law with this case. Mm. It wasn't just about Evelyn Gregory and her shares. It set a major precedent that continues to resonate throughout tax law even today. But what were some of the specific arguments the court used in reaching its decision?
Justice Sutherland, who wrote the opinion for the court, was very clear in his reasoning. He argued that if they allowed Gregory's scheme to stand, it would basically undermine the whole tax system. He famously wrote that allowing this would exalt artifice above reality.
That's a pretty powerful statement. So essentially, they were saying you can't just dress up a transaction to make it look legal if the underlying purpose is solely to avoid paying taxes.
You got it. The court basically said Gregory's creation of Avril Corporation was nothing more than a contrivance, a legal maneuver with no real business justification. It was purely about trying to sidestep those taxes. And this case, as we've been saying, wasn't just about Evelyn Gregory. It set a standard that echoes through tax law even today.
So this case really sent shockwaves through the legal and financial world. It wasn't just about one woman and her taxes. It established a whole new way of approaching tax law. But how did this case affect the IRS itself in terms of how they handle these sorts of situations? Did it lead to any significant changes in how they operate?
It definitely did. Gregory v. Helfring wasn't just a big legal win for the IRS. It was a bit of a wake-up call. It forced them to up their game when it came to fighting these sophisticated tax avoidance strategies.
I could see that. So how did the IRS actually change their approach after this case? Did they start looking at transactions with a more critical eye?
They kind of had to. The case really showed them that they needed to look past the surface of transactions and dig into the actual economic realities. They became more focused on finding those instances where the form of a transaction was basically being manipulated to create a tax benefit that didn't line up with its actual substance.
So they had to get better at spotting these fancy tax maneuvers. Are there any specific examples of how the IRS put the lessons they learned from Gregory into practice?
Oh yeah, there are plenty. Take the CNT investors case, for instance. This one involved a group of investors who tried to cook up this complicated web of transactions, all designed to make it look like they were taking losses on paper without actually losing any real money, you know, trying to game the system.
Sounds like they were trying to pull a fast one, hoping the IRS wouldn't catch on to their little scheme.
Exactly. But the court, remembering Gregory, saw right through it. They ruled that the transactions didn't have any real economic substance or any real business purpose. It was just a dressed-up attempt to twist the tax code to their advantage.
So Gregory gave them the legal muscle to shut down this scheme. Are there any other cases where the IRS used the principles from Gregory v. Helfring to successfully challenge these kinds of tax avoidance tactics?
Definitely. Another one that comes to mind is the ACM partnership case. This one involved a partnership that tried to use this roundabout series of transactions to basically make a huge capital gain vanish from the IRS's radar.
And I'm betting, based on the pattern here, that the court applied Gregory and said, nice try, but no.
You got it. The court found that the transactions were all about avoiding taxes. They didn't have any other legitimate business purpose. They were just structured in a way to try to make them look kosher.
So Gregory v. Helfring is like a giant caution sign for anyone thinking about getting too creative with their taxes. Don't underestimate the IRS and how well they know this case. But it's interesting to think about how Gregory didn't just influence case law. It also had a hand in shaping the tax code itself. Did it lead to any specific changes in tax rules or how the IRS operates?
Oh, absolutely. The impact of Gregory goes way beyond just individual court cases. One of the biggest outcomes was that they actually codified the economic substance doctrine.
Can you explain that one for our listeners? What exactly is the economic substance doctrine, and how did Gregory play a part in it coming about?
Sure. The economic substance doctrine, which is basically taken straight from the ideas established in Gregory v. Helfring, basically says that for a transaction to be considered legitimate for tax purposes, it can't just be about getting a tax benefit. There needs to be a real economic reason for the transaction, not just a desire to avoid taxes.
So the IRS wasn't satisfied with just winning in court. They took what they learned from Gregory and made it part of their actual rules.
Exactly. Putting the economic substance doctrine into their rule book shows just how powerful Gregory v. Helfring really was. It changed how the IRS analyzes and challenges these potentially abusive tax deals.
It's amazing how one court case from almost 100 years ago can still have such a huge impact. It really shows how important legal precedents are. But it also shows that these ideas can be adapted and applied to new situations, even as the world of finance keeps changing.
You're right. Take cryptocurrency, for example. This new technology is a whole new ballgame for tax authorities.
It makes sense. Cryptocurrency, with its decentralized nature and focus on anonymity, seems like the perfect breeding ground for people who want to avoid taxes.
That's true. And that's exactly why the IRS is leaning heavily on the principles from Gregory v. Helfring to navigate the complex world of cryptocurrency and make sure everyone's playing by the rules.
So how are they applying those principles to crypto transactions? Are they looking for those same red flags, like transactions that don't have a real business reason or seem like they're just about avoiding taxes?
Exactly. They're asking the same basic questions. Is there a genuine economic reason for this transaction? Does what the deal looks like on paper match up with what's actually happening? Or is this just a sneaky way to hide income or dodge taxes by using this new technology as a shield?
It's like Gregory v. Helfring predicted these challenges. It's flexible enough to apply to cutting-edge areas like crypto.
It's pretty remarkable, isn't it? The case gives us a framework for approaching complicated financial transactions, no matter how new or technologically advanced they might be.
And that leads us to an important point. We've discussed how Gregory is being used in the context of crypto, but what about other new financial technologies? Like, what about decentralized finance or DeFi? This is an area that's growing so fast and really pushing the limits of traditional finance.
That's a great observation. DeFi is a really interesting area that has both potential benefits and challenges. And I think Gregory v. Helfring could have a big influence on how tax laws are applied in this new frontier.
It's wild to think that a case from the 1930s could be so relevant to a technology that didn't even exist until recently. Can you give us some insights into how Gregory might apply to DeFi transactions?
Well, one of the key things about DeFi is the use of smart contracts. These are basically agreements written in code that automatically execute themselves and are stored on a blockchain.
So how does Gregory V. Helvering, with its focus on substance over form, fit into this world of code and algorithms? How can the IRS determine what a transaction is really about when it's carried out by a smart contract?
That's the million-dollar question. Just because a transaction is done through a smart contract doesn't mean it's automatically off the hook when it comes to Gregory. The IRS will still look beyond the code and figure out the real economic substance of the transaction. They'll be looking for signs of tax avoidance schemes, even if they're disguised in the language of DeFi and smart contracts.
So they're not going to be fooled by the tech wizardry. They're going to peel back the layers and see what's really going on. But how do they actually do that? What kind of tools and techniques are they using to analyze these complex DeFi transactions?
Well, one way is to look at the transaction history on the blockchain. They can track how the money moves and see if there are patterns that suggest someone's trying to avoid taxes. They can also look at the terms of the smart contract itself to figure out what it was really intended to do.
So they're adapting their investigative methods to keep up with the changing world of finance. But it's not just about technology, is it? It's about understanding the real economic substance of these transactions.
Exactly. The IRS is realizing that just because something is called DeFi doesn't mean it's automatically legitimate when it comes to taxes. They're going to be asking those same basic questions we've been discussing. Is there a real business reason for this transaction? Does the structure of the transaction match up with its substance?
So you can't just say, oh, it's DeFi, it's all decentralized, so there are no tax rules. The IRS is sending a clear message. We're paying attention and we're going to scrutinize these transactions just like we do any other financial activity.
Exactly. The IRS is making it clear that the principles of Gregory V. Helvering aren't limited to the world of traditional finance. They apply to this new frontier of DeFi as well, and they're going to enforce them.
This brings up a really important point for our listeners who are interested in DeFi. What are some key takeaways they should remember when it comes to the tax implications of these transactions?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember is that just because you don't know about the rules doesn't mean you're exempt. Just because a transaction happens in this decentralized, somewhat anonymous environment doesn't mean you can forget about your tax obligations.
So you got to understand the tax implications of DeFi transactions before you jump in head first. Mm-hmm. But how can our listeners, who are mostly lawyers and law students, stay ahead of the game in this constantly evolving area? What resources or strategies would you recommend?
I think the key is to stay informed. The IRS is always putting out new guidance and rulings on crypto and DeFi, so it's crucial to keep up with those developments. There are also a lot of great resources from professional groups and industry experts that can help you stay on top of the latest trends and best practices.
Sounds like continuing education is super important here. But beyond staying informed, are there any proactive steps lawyers can take to help their clients handle the tax complexities of DeFi?
Definitely. Lawyers can play a big role in helping clients structure their DeFi transactions in a way that minimizes tax risks. This means understanding the relevant tax laws, doing thorough due diligence, and carefully documenting everything.
So it's about being proactive, not reactive. It's about anticipating potential issues and finding solutions that are both legally sound and tax efficient.
Exactly. And it's about being open and honest with clients about the potential risks and benefits of getting involved in DeFi activities. It's important to be realistic about the challenges and help clients make informed decisions.
That's great advice for anyone navigating the sometimes choppy waters of decentralized finance. But let's shift gears a bit and talk about the broader significance of Gregory V. Helvering. We've talked about its impact on specific areas like crypto and DeFi, but how has this case influenced legal thinking in a more general sense?
That's a great question. I think one of the most important legacies of Gregory is that it helped us develop a more well-rounded approach to analyzing legal issues. It challenged lawyers and judges to move past a narrow focus on the literal words of the law and to consider the bigger picture and the intent behind those rules.
So it's about looking beyond the technicalities and understanding the spirit of the law.
Precisely. Gregory V. Helvering taught us that legal analysis should be grounded in a real-world understanding of how transactions work and what people are trying to achieve.
That's a really insightful point.
Yeah.
So it's not just about finding loopholes or manipulating technicalities. It's about understanding the underlying principles and applying them in a way that's fair and prevents abuse.
You nailed it. Gregory brought about a new era of legal reasoning that values substance over form. And that principle, as we've seen, is still guiding us today, not just in tax law, but across many different areas of law.
It's amazing how one court case can have such a lasting impact. It shows us that the law is always changing. It's a dynamic system that adapts over time to new challenges and evolving societal norms.
I completely agree. Gregory v. Helvering is a perfect example of how dynamic the law can be and how it can adapt to even the most dramatic changes in the economic and technological landscape.
That's a great point to end on. We've covered a lot today, diving deep into Gregory v. Helvering and exploring its lasting impact on tax law, legal thinking, and even emerging technologies like crypto and DeFi.
It's been great discussing this fascinating case with you. I think our listeners will come away with a much better understanding of how important it is and how relevant it still is today.
I hope so. And for our listeners who want to learn more, we've put together a list of resources and articles on our website. Check those out. And now, a word from our sponsors. And we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Gregory v. Helvering. You know, it's amazing how this case from way back in 1935 is still shaping how we think about tax law today, especially with all the wild stuff happening in finance and tech these days.
It really shows how powerful those basic legal principles can be. The fact that a case from almost a century ago can still be relevant to today's world is incredible.
I agree. We've talked about how the ideas from Gregory, things like substance over form, business purpose, and economic substance, apply to areas like cryptocurrency and all that decentralized finance stuff. But I think it's important to take a step back and think about the bigger picture. What are the long-term implications of this case? How has Gregory v. Helvering changed not only tax law, but the way we think about the law in general?
That's a great point. I think one of the most important things Gregory did was to emphasize that we need to look beyond the superficial aspects of a transaction and focus on what's really happening economically. It's about understanding the intent behind what people are doing, not just the technical details of how they did it.
So it's not enough to just make sure everything is legally airtight.
Yeah.
You also have to be able to show that the transaction has a real purpose and that it's not just about dodging taxes.
Exactly. Gregory forced lawyers and judges to get smarter about how they analyze transactions. They couldn't just rely on the way a deal was structured on paper. They had to dig deeper and figure out the real economic reasons behind it.
I imagine that change in thinking had a big impact on other areas of law, too, not just taxes.
Absolutely. It really highlighted the importance of understanding the why behind the what. The case opened the door to a more comprehensive way of thinking about the law, one that takes into account the bigger context and the purpose behind laws and regulations.
It's like Gregory pushed us to develop a more nuanced understanding of legal principles, encouraging lawyers and judges to move away from just interpreting the law literally and to embrace a more contextual and purpose-driven approach.
That's a great way to put it. Gregory v. Helvering helped bring about a new era of legal reasoning, one that values substance over form. And that principle, as we've been discussing, is still alive and kicking today.
It's pretty amazing how one case can have such a long-lasting impact. And it reminds us that legal precedents, especially those that establish really important principles, can change and adapt to new situations.
You're right. Gregory v. Helvering gives us a model for how to analyze complex transactions, even those involving really new technologies like blockchain and smart contracts. The principles behind it are timeless and flexible.
So as we wrap up our deep dives into Gregory v. Helvering, what's the most important thing for our listeners to take away, especially those who are lawyers and law students?
I think the biggest takeaway is that understanding the principles from Gregory v. Helvering isn't just about knowing tax law. It's about having a sophisticated way of thinking about the law in general. It's about being able to see beyond the surface of a transaction and figure out its true economic substance and purpose. And that skill is valuable in any area of law.
Well said. And on that note, I want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Gregory v. Helvering. It's been a fascinating look at a truly groundbreaking case.
It's been my pleasure. And to our listeners, I encourage you to keep exploring the world of tax law and to appreciate the enduring impact of cases like this one.
And until next time, keep on learning and exploring the ever-changing world of law.